Abutar! Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 100. Welcome back. I hope you all had a fantastic new year. Hope you enjoyed the holidays and are ready for 2022, because I know I am ready. Going to be a very interesting year, hopefully one that will end toward the end of the year with us having some happiness at the World Cup. Of course, we got to qualify to get there, but hopefully the end result is that we are playing in the World Cup. So a lot to look forward to with regards to the playoffs. Look forward to this, what I think is a fantastic Liga B win season with three teams in the hunt. Yes, I still do think Benfica will still be in the hunt. And obviously, we're looking forward to, of course, seeing as much football, soccer as possible. And before I get going with my usual preview of the upcoming week, with week 17 of the Liga B win, Taça de Portugal next week. And I've got a lot of things also that I want to talk about, which I will. Number one, Luis Dias to Liverpool. Probably not going to happen, but here's why I think it may happen. Carlos Carvalhal, all these stories that were linking him, some of the stories were from very good sources, going to Braga. What happened? Fabio Silva is taking Porto to the tribunal over some money he wasn't paid for when he renewed in 2019. I was shocked by this, and I got a few things to say about it after I do my preview for the upcoming week. Estoril Porto, what a mess that was, but at the end of the day, they are going to be playing on a Saturday. Benfica, after all the changes with the manager, they're now dealing with a lot of COVID issues. And also some special news about RTP that just bought the rights to the Portuguese Cup and the Supertaça, and you'll want to hear it because that's really great news for the fans outside of Portugal. I think a problem we've been having the last few years with trying to watch those matches, I think, is about to be solved, and I'll explain that in a minute. But like I always do, let's discuss and preview the upcoming week. Obviously, Liga B win, week 17. It is the final match of the first round of the Liga B win. After this weekend, then everyone starts to play each other a second time, and you basically reverse whoever was home and the first time you played. Now you are going to be the away team. And everything gets going on Friday with Santa Clara Sporting in the Azores. This is a match. Ruben Amorim is not available. He tested positive. Basically, Sporting has had 8 positive cases since December. And the latest person now to be touched by the virus is Ruben Amorim. So one of his assistants will take over. And Sporting, again, which have not yet lost in domestic competition, sit in a first place level with FC Porto in first place. They're going to be making the trip to the Açores. Santa Clara, still with their interim manager, Thiago Souza. Santa Clara has not yet announced him as either permanent or they've not hired a new manager yet. He is their third manager this year. He's already managing them for 2 matches. They beat Guimarães at home in his first match, and then the most recent week 16, they lost in Passos de Ferreira and Cesar Peixoto's debut. And this is going to be his third match this weekend. But Santa Clara so far has not basically appointed a new manager, and I find that to be a pretty interesting situation. And then on Saturday, Vizela will be playing Moreirense. Moreirense, they're on their third manager of the year. Lito Vidigal didn't even last more than 5 matches. He lost 4 of his 5 matches. Just a surprising situation. As I record this, Ricardo Sapinto, who apparently had trained the team on Thursday, is expected to be taken over, although when I'm recording this, it hasn't been officially announced. But Sapinto is back in Portugal. I think the last time he was in Portugal, if I recall, he managed Braga. And then I remember he went to manage then in Turkey. But Moreirense with Ricardo Sapinto, if in fact he is officialized, they'll be taking on Vizela. Estoril Porto, is also on Saturday, and obviously you probably already know the whole story. Major COVID issues at Estoril, I think up to 28 people, players, and staff were infected and tested positive. There was a report at one point that Estoril was going to field their under-23 team against Porto. And then eventually their under-23s had a lot of cases as well as part of the 28. And then there was talk about rescheduling the match, having it be postponed this weekend to another date. Then there was another report that Porto wasn't going to agree to it because of Porto's busy schedule coming up this month. So it went on, and there was a three-way Zoom meeting or something of that between Estoril, Porto, and Liga, and they weren't able to to discuss it and to do something about it. So as a result, because they did not agree, the match is going to go on as scheduled. And I believe one of the reasons why Estoril is going to be in a position to field the team. Remember, the Liga rule now is only 13 players. You need to have 13 players, of which one of them is a goalkeeper. This was a rule changed a few weeks ago after, you know, that whole thing with Bissad and Benfica. So because of that, and because of the fact that the Portuguese government within the past week lowered the quarantine period from 10 to 7 days, it enables people to basically get out of quarantine quicker. So if I read correctly in the three newspapers, this is what's going to enable Estoril to field a team this weekend. Now, is Bruno Pinheiro and Estoril going to be their best team that has enabled them to be in fifth place in the Liga? No. They obviously are going to have some players missing. I don't know right now at this moment exactly who those players are. The bottom line is it won't be, from everything I understand, their best team. Now, Estoril hasn't been playing that well lately. Ever since, Pinheiro was linked with Besiktas, the club since then, I think, has like two losses and a draw. One of those losses was a Taça de Portugal elimination. So Estoril does not go into this match in the best of conditions. They lamented the fact that they have to play this match. You know, they talk about the verdade esportivo, the ability that when two teams play, that they're both playing to their maximum potential so that it is a true match. Best team wins. And here, basically that's not going to be the case. You're going to have a much stronger Porto playing a very weakened Estoril side. On the other hand, the rule is if you have 13, you got to go out and play. And that's, I think, part of the reason why, because they are going to have probably more than 30 players. We'll know for sure on Saturday. Porto has gotten some criticism for why they did not reschedule, which I think for me is a very fair criticism. Apparently if Estoril suggested maybe playing during the Taça de Liga week, which would have worked out pretty well for Porto because neither Porto or Estoril are playing in the Taça de Liga, which is coming up later this month on the 25th and the 26th. Those are the days of the Final Four. But Porto's got players missing that week with the international break. That is an international break, yes. Portugal's not involved, but in South America, because, there were so many matches postponed, they are playing, I believe, CONCACAF, so you're going to see players. I know Moreirense, Vitória. You're going to see Eustáquio from Passos de Ferreira play for Canada. So there are going to be internationals later this month. And then, of course, you've got Porto's players are going to be away. So Porto, if I read the story correctly, Anjogo wasn't very keen on playing a Liga match. Remember, the Liga is the number one objective for everybody. And obviously having Tereme away with Dairan, Luis Diaz away, and all the other different players are going to be away on duty. The schedule just wasn't right. Now, someone could criticize Porto because, after all, they are available. And after all, if they were playing in the Taça de Liga Final Four, one could say, well, obviously they couldn't postpone that. They would have still had to play it. But at the end of the day, this is the Liga. It is the most important competition. It is the number one objective of all the teams. So Porto is just essentially defending their interests. Now, I'm not entirely sure. I'm just looking here on my calendar why they couldn't play the 17th, 18th, 19th, or the 20th. Either way, it doesn't matter right now. Neither team is going to be playing because they're going to be playing this weekend as scheduled. So that's going to be taking place this upcoming weekend. And then to wrap up on Saturday, you're going to have Boavista playing Tundela. Then Sunday, Benfica will be in action. Benfica, again, six cases. Verissimo finally gets to play in a match where he had a certain amount of time to get his team ready or for him to be really involved. They are going to be playing Passos de Ferreira, which last I heard, Cesar Peixoto, he is tested positive, and he was managing the team at training through technological methods where they must have had a camera and he was still able to watch and direct things. But last I heard, I don't think he's going to be available this weekend. But you got Benfica and Passos de Ferreira. You got Portimonense Marítimo. That's a good match. Braga Famalicão. I'll talk about Carlos Clavial in a minute, as well as Ricardo Horta, who was getting some interest from some big clubs. And then you've got Bissad playing Roca. And then pretty much action winds down on Monday with a pretty good battle of two teams up north, and that's Gil Vicente and Vitória de Guimarães. So that's a pretty good way to finish week 17. And then after that, like I said, we go to week 18 the following week, obviously everyone will start playing each other a second time. And then next week, we have, of course, the Taça de Portugal, the quarterfinals, one leg only. It gets going on Tuesday with a Davy and Goliath match, and that's Leça from the fourth division will be taking on Sporting. Leça is going to be playing this match, Estádio do Marvel, over at Passos de Ferreira. So they're going to be using their stadium to host this match. And I've always said that one of the sad things sometimes about a small club when they have to play a big club is even though they're going to benefit from playing on television, I think they even make some, you know, good money out of it, which for some of these smaller clubs is a humongous amount of money. But they're going to essentially be playing in a stadium that, although will be set up to be their home stadium, really, you know, not really. I mean, I think Sporting players have spent more time playing in that stadium that are currently on the team than the actual Leça players have played in that stadium. But, you know, in a way, it almost evens it up a little bit more, as opposed to if you were playing at Leça and you have to deal with whatever the situation is at Leça, because that's what Leça plays in every day. That's not going to happen. So Leça is going to be playing that at Passos de Ferreira's stadium. And Leça Sporting gets things going on Tuesday. Again, Ruben Amorim, based on the latest reports, will not be available. I don't expect much of a surprise here. I think Leça maybe keeps it interesting. But I think at the end of the day, Sporting is Sporting, and I just don't see them somehow losing this. But you know what? They call this the Taça de Portugal because it's the competition where the little people can be the big people for a day. So we'll see. Then on Wednesday, we have Rio Ave, Tundela, and then we have Vizela, Porto. That's two pretty good matches. Rio Ave from the second division playing a first division team. Vizela, I think just a few weeks ago, played Porto at home and lost. So Porto will do it all over again. And again, I think you have to say that on paper, especially because all of the internationals will still be with the team. Porto so far, outside of Luis Diaz, has been okay with the COVID. They've done a great job compared to some of the other big teams. Really a lot of credit to Porto. But Porto will be going to Vizela. And then on Thursday, it wraps up with Portimonense playing Mafra from the second division. And in case you're wondering, the Leça Sporting Vizela Porto matches are going to be on TVI in Portugal. The others are going to be on Sport TV. And I'll tell you why in the future that shouldn't happen anymore, and we'll be able to see it in North America. And I'll tell you about that here in a few minutes. Let's go to the second division report. First off, again, much like the first division, this is the final week of the first leg. And then after that, everyone will be playing each other a second time. And the most interesting match to me this weekend was the fact that there were several managerial changes recently in the second division. Pedro Ribeiro. A lot of you might remember him a few years ago. He was the manager at Bissad. And there was that particular match when they were playing Porto in the Jamor. And then there was apparently some type of thing that took place between Pedro Ribeiro and Conceição. I don't know if you remember the whole thing in the tunnel. I don't remember if they had video, but nothing came of it, at least best that I know. But the point is he is managing. He was managing Penafiel, and he left them, and he went to go and take over at Académico do Viseu. And what's interesting is that Penafiel just hired a new manager, a gentleman named Filho. So this weekend, you've got Penafiel with a new manager, Filho, taking on Académico Viseu, Pedro Ribeiro, who used to manage Penafiel. So that's your match on Saturday, but those are the great storylines for this weekend. Another interesting match this weekend, you've got Casa Pia and Leixões. But then you've got the Clásico of the second division when it comes to the B teams, and that's on basically coming up on Monday. You've got Benfica B taking on FC Porto B on Monday afternoon, 1600 hours. That match is being played in Seychelles. That's a BTV game. Benfica B leading the way in the second division with 33 points. Feirense from the Feira, second with 32 points. Casa Pia in third with 30, followed by Rio Ave in fourth with 27. And then Chaves and Nacional are fifth and sixth with 26 points. So the second division being led by Benfica B, but Benfica B has something like a dozen players, if I read correctly, that have been infected, and they've got to play a Porto team that I think is in better shape in terms of those details. So a very, very big match. And regardless of where they are in the standings, the classification, it really doesn't matter. These are the future players of these two big Portuguese clubs, and they're essentially going to be playing each other. And Benfica B has a new manager, by the way, obviously with Verissimo taking over the first squad, team squad. Antonio Oliveira, who used to manage Atlético Paranaense in Brazil. There was some talk that Sacramento, who had been Mourinho's assistant at Roma, was going to take over, but that did not happen. Antonio Oliveira is the new manager of Benfica B, so there's another storyline to the game. In addition to the fact it is a second division Clásico, you also have Benfica B debuting their new manager in that match. So that's that, and then Nacional Feirense, again, is the other match on Monday, and then you've got some matches that have been rescheduled for February, and that's Feirense taking on Académica, and Chaves taking on Rio Ave. Those matches from week 17 have been pushed over into February. And, you know, the second division, we haven't had two matches. I think next week is going to be the third match that involves B-side, I think next Thursday. But the second division's had a lot of matches rescheduled. There's been some matches that haven't been, but there have been more matches rescheduled in the second division than there has been in the first division, and that's the case again with the fact that the full spread of games for this weekend won't be taking place because some of the matches got postponed into the month of February. So that's your second division report. And one thing, by the way, I also wanted to say, I read a great article from Portugal, and they were talking about how, you know, in the first division, you have the big three. Then you have your other two or three clubs that are trying to fight to get into Europa or the Europa Conference League. And then you have some of the clubs that are at the bottom that are trying to avoid relegation. And the second division, you literally have, and remember, if Benfica B wins the second division, it means nothing because they can't win. Well, they can win the second division, excuse me, but they can't go up. So as a result, even though Benfica can win the title, they can't go up. So that means you've got five teams right now that are battling essentially to get promoted, whereas basically top two get promoted to the first division, and then if you're the third place team, basically you're going to be playing in the playoffs. So a lot of competition at the top in the second division for the playoff, for the promotion. And then you look at the bottom, and Académica and Varzima are really at the bottom, which probably is good because that means all the clubs on top are probably safe and will avoid the drop. So the second division this year has been pretty good. I know a lot of people don't follow it. I've always said that I wish a lot of the second division matches, or at least if they don't do it live, maybe put it up a few days later, put it up on YouTube, put it up on the Liga website and let people register a password to go see the games. But the point is, let people see the games. Portugal is built so much on youth, and that's where they got started. So that's just my opinion. But again, second division, really working out well with a lot of competition. And obviously this weekend, we're going to have the big Benfica B, FC Porto B Clásico. My picks for this week, didn't do any picks last week. The week before that, I sucked. I was 0-4. So I kind of needed a week off. And 59% correct. I've got 39 correct, 27 incorrect, which gives me 59%. At one point, I was like 78%. And this last 2 months, I've not been doing well. So 2022 better be better for me. So this weekend, and I'm going to go with some, I'm going to take it easy and pick some of the bigger matches. Benfica Passos de Ferreira. I don't like Benfica's COVID situation. I'm still not comfortable that Verissimo has got the team to where he wants it to be. I think it's always dangerous to change a lot of things in the beginning of the season, in the middle of the season. But I think for me, I'm still going to predict that Benfica will still pull out a win. I'm going to say 2-0. But if they were to draw, I honestly wouldn't be surprised. But honestly, I think right now I'm going to say that Benfica will win. Estoril Porto, this might be my easiest pick for the weekend. And I'm going to pick Porto to win 3-0. Braga Famalicão, I'm going to pick Braga to win 1-0. And then in the Clásico of the second division, I'm going to go with a draw. Benfica 2, FC Porto B 2. So I'm predicting Benfica, Porto, Braga, and a draw in the second division Clásico between the B teams of Benfica and Porto. And again, I usually like to be a little bit tougher with my picks in terms of picking tougher matches. But I think today I'm going to try to get myself back on track. And as a result, these are going to be the four that I'll be going into for the following week. Let's get going now with my fast and furious section, where I'm just going to be touching on a lot of the big topics during the past week and giving you my opinion on it. And again, I do this. I love this. But anything I say is not coming from the heart, but from my mind. I'm going to tell it like it is. Sometimes I'm going to be critical. There are episodes when I'm critical of a team and all of a sudden somebody hates me because, well, I'm anti their team. No. If you happen to be following this history of this podcast, you know that more often than not, I'm going to tell you things. And I think my consistency of criticism across the board has been pretty good. I think everybody has gotten a shot from me. But to be fair, I think everybody's also gotten a lot of good compliments from me. I've been tough on the Federation, but I've been very complimentary on the Federation. So always keep that in mind. And I don't know what to tell you if you don't believe me, because our Portuguese culture as it is, you know, we talk about verdade esportiva, but we have so much conspiracy theories that I don't think anybody believes anybody. They think everybody has an angle. Well, I don't. But anyway, let's get going. We'll start off first with Benfica again. Very interesting time for Benfica with Verissimo. Can he come in? Wasn't the easiest situation to make your first match a Clásico. It did not go over very well. I think if you're Verissimo, you've now had probably a good week now, more than a week, to basically try to get the team to where you want it to be. And to me, it's very simple. I'm going to just say this right now. I don't know. First of all, there's a lot of talent already on the pitch. There are a lot of players here. And if they don't, then this is a problem. But when you play for a big club in Portugal, you know you're going to be playing in Europe. And you know that every time you play, everyone's going to be watching you in Portugal. But you also play at sometimes to be at a club like Benfica or Porto Sporting, because you want to set yourself up to play at a bigger club in Portugal. And the other day I was talking to some people and arguing about this, and they were saying, you know, a guy like Pizzi, who has received some criticism and all this. You know, is the reason why Benfica has a player like Pizzi and maybe hasn't done well the last few years because he's not hungry anymore and he doesn't want to go to a bigger club because he's a little bit older And as a result, he's playing for Benfica, which is already pretty good. But maybe there's just a few players like that. Rafa has always talked about, you know, he's been discussed with going to a bigger club, but he's never left. And he's getting a little bit older. I mean, he's still young. He's doing very well. But eventually you have to wonder when he's going to be making the move abroad. My point is you just wonder sometimes with some of these players if they just get complacent. Do some of these players realize that playing for Benfica means you're not only playing for Benfica, but you're also playing for your next opportunity to go to a bigger club? Because there's not many Luisões in the clubs. You could come back and finish your career like Pep did with Porto, but not many people want to spend many, many years at a big three club. They want to go and taste it abroad. And there are a lot of players in Benfica right now that are playing like they're not thinking about their next big job. Because when you have that much talent, there's no way in the world they should be 7 points behind. There's, you know, remember, you did qualify for the Champions League, although I realize Barcelona is not the Barcelona that we know. But it's very fair to say that this is a Benfica team that's good. But the reality is that they should be better. There's no way they should be 7 points behind Porto or Sporting for all the money that's been spent on these players. But right now they're underachieving. And the question is can Verissimo turn that around the way Bruno Lage did? Could he light a fire under them? What I saw in the Liga Clásico, I didn't see that fire, in my opinion at least. At the end of the day, Porto over those two matches in the week was clearly the better team. Clearly the better team. But Verissimo has a lot of work to do. And a lot of Benfica fans did not like JJ. Now they have a new manager. And the people that didn't want JJ, well, this is what you have now. And now you have to see how it's going to work. But the goal, Benfica's number one objective is to win the Liga. And even though they're still in the hunt with the Taça of the Liga, they're still in the Champions League, the reality is Liga is the objective. So we'll see what happens with them. They're dealing with all these COVID situations. It's sort of a deja vu compared to what they went through last year. The only difference is they have a lot less cases this year. So to me, the best word I would describe Benfica right now is underachieving, and can they, and some of those players, you know, can they finally step it up and play like they want to go play for one of the big clubs in Europe? Because that's always been the formula. You dream about playing for a big club in Europe, and what's going to happen eventually is, you know, you'll get that shot. But the only way to do that is you got to play like a big player at Benfica. And right now, I don't think there's a lot of players at Benfica. I mean, Rafa's been doing well. But remember, he's only been doing well, like I said in the last episode, for like the last 5 weeks. I mean, I know he's been doing okay, maybe going back to the Braga game. But overall, I think I expected a lot more for him as well, especially for what I believe is still the most expensive player in Portugal, I think, when he was bought for 19 or 20 million. I'm not sure if that's updated or if anyone's beat that. At least I don't remember it off the top of my head. I got so much information here in front of me. Sporting, again, I've said that I think they're the best team in Portugal. Going to be a big test at Santa Clara. But, you know, the biggest thing right now with Sporting is they've had 8 cases since December. Pote is in a bit of a drought. He does have a history of scoring a lot of goals against Santa Clara. Well, I can't think of a better time to break that drought than this weekend going to the Açores. And it's just been a very good, you know, Sporting right now, again, like Varandas, he's very happy about the team. They're competing. They're the only big club in Portugal competing in all 4 competitions with the Europe and the 3 domestic. And Sporting is just doing well. My only warning that I want to say is that eventually what goes up has to come down, and eventually Sporting is going to hit a bump. They did that last year right around April when I think their 10-point lead got down to 4 points. But they did have the little drop. They haven't done that drop yet, and neither has Porto. And when that drop happens, because it will happen, it's just common human thing that it's very hard to go from start to finish and be 100%, maybe not necessarily win every match, but just play so well. Eventually you have some bad draws. And I think the question for Sporting, or Porto you could also say, is when is that going to happen? When are they going to have that drop? Because I think that's going to happen really soon. I don't think it's going to happen with the Taça de Portugal. Although I'll tell you what, if they get eliminated by Leça, one of the bigger upsets we've seen in the Portuguese Cup in many years. But Sporting, That's the question I leave you with. Benfica, underachievers, Sporting, when are they going to suffer? And everybody goes through it, that drop, and can they recover? And when is that going to happen from here until May? Last year, it happened late in the season. They survived. When is it going to happen? I think that's the biggest question to ask about Sporting. Porto, there's a lot to say about Porto. First off, there's been a lot of news about Diaz and Liverpool. Some very reliable sources have come out and said that it's not happening, that there haven't been any discussions. But here's why I think it's possible. First off, Porto didn't qualify for the Champions League. A few years ago, Fabio Silva was sold in the winter market, if you recall, which shocked a lot of people. I know it shocked me. So if Liverpool, and I don't see, by the way, Liverpool would sign Diaz because they're going to be missing some players with the Africa Cup of Nations. But my point is if Liverpool comes to them with 50 or 60 million euros, I would be surprised if Porto turns that down, knowing how much money they're not going to get because they are in the Europa League. Now, a lot of people are going to sit there and say, of course not. Come on, man. You're doing it again. You don't know what you're talking about. No, I do know what I'm talking about, okay? It's a business, much as it is a professional soccer football team. And if a big offer comes along, even though this guy Luis Diaz is needed to help them win the title, it's going to be hard to turn down since you've already lost all this money with the Champions League. So as much as, yeah, it's probably not going to happen, I probably put it at 75% it won't happen, but I'm going to leave the door for 25% that maybe something does happen at the end of the month, because if Liverpool, and by the way, if Liverpool were to get Diaz, they're getting him because they want to catch him before someone else does. They're going to try to strike first. And it's Liverpool, one of the biggest teams in the world. They've got a lot of resources. But I leave that 25% possibility for why I think it could happen. And I think that's a very important part to pay attention to this because, you know, everybody thinks like a fan, which means you think about the 3 points. But in Portugal, I think sometimes you have to think as a fan and you have to think as a business person because, you know, leading now up to Fabio Silva's situation with Porto, I mean, I was shocked. You know, initially when I saw it on Recorded en el Bol, I thought, you know, this is when Porto fans like to say that those newspapers are trying to make fake stories. And now you see it being reported by O Jogo and you see that apparently there's truth to it. And let's think about this for a second. Let's put this into perspective, especially for any Porto fans who might be hating on me now. This is Fabio Silva. This was your crown jewel of the under-19 generation that won the UEFA Youth League. This was a kid when he started to play for the first team and was playing. It was like his emotion. People fell in love with the kid. He is Porto. He is the new generation of Porto. And I'm telling you right now, for him to have to be put into the position to have to take his club that, you know, his club of love that he owes so much for to the tribunal, that is not an easy thing you do. People, hardcore fans remember that stuff. On the other hand, you can't blame the kid because how many people, if they find out they're owed 253,000 euros, well, it's my club, and I'm going to let it go. How many people say that? Not many. It's, you know, a lot of money in Portugal, 253. So I was surprised. You know, in Porto lately, Estrela Amadora did a complaint with them, if I recall. We had the Zadu situation where his club from Nigeria were claiming the FIFA solidarity payment that they hadn't received it. And there's been a lot of these little things that have been going on with Porto. And, you know, I know in the case with Zadu, it was chalked up to just a mistake. But when you're a big club like Porto, I mean, you know, you've won the Champions League, you won UEFA. Look at all the players you've sent throughout Europe. Look at the managers. Villas-Boas and Mourinho, you're a big club. And I mean, this is just, you know, to have now another situation where you've been accused of not paying paying something, that's not good. And that's why I'm saying that, you know, fans like to see what they see on the social media of players walking down the long tunnel to go to the pitch for training, and everybody's in a great mood and everybody loves. I mean, again, if you've ever played professionally, if you ever worked for a professional team, if you've ever worked at a job that attracts a lot of media attention, you know that when you're behind the scenes, that there are certain things that you know about that never make it to the outside. And sometimes when decisions are made, it makes a lot of sense to you because you know, but for the fans, it doesn't, because the fans don't know all the details. But, you know, again, I don't think they're going to sell Luis Diaz, but you know what? It wouldn't totally shock me because something is going on financially. Having said that, it would also be tough to sell Luis Diaz because Luis Diaz is the straw that stirs Porto right now. And if Porto do sell him, by the way, if it were in fact to happen, they better get the $80 million. Don't be selling him for half that. Unless you get maybe half that and maybe let them throw in, you know, two players or something like that. Especially players that could step in and maybe help out a little bit. You know, I know Pepe, you know, they might be, you know, grooming him to be the next biggest thing. But, you know, if they do sell him, they better get a lot of money for him. So that's the situation. Sergio Conceição got a statue in the museum. No, really, no surprise. The years of him as manager have been fantastic, so no, really no surprise. It did happen, I think, out of the blue. You know, it just happened on New Year's Day, but I think it was well deserved. And so that's your Porto update. Moving along to other things, Braga, Carlos Carvalhal was linked to go to Atlético Mineiro. Some very good news sources confirmed it, and then later they were rebutted, and reports said it wasn't true and that he's not going. And if I'm Carlos Carvalhal, I think, in my opinion, he should stay. Good situation. Disappointing that the way they are, they're probably going to be the fourth place team in the Liga, but they still got Europa. And the truth of the matter is, you know, unless he gets a big three job, this is the best job right now in Portugal for him. And, you know, maybe if they sell Ricardo Horta in the January window, the current transfer market, maybe you consider leaving because that's one of your top players. But I think right now he likes the youth on the team, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's going to stay. But again, that's what we know of as of today. If he were to leave, he'd be the third Portuguese manager to leave this season in the Liga B1 to take a bigger job abroad. But we'll see. We'll see if it does happen. But right now, at least when I'm recording this, all reports say it's not going to happen unless Atlético Mineiro come along and increase their offer by 50%. Maybe that changes things, you know. Don't be angry at managers or players. I mean, they have a right to make a living. They only have a short amount of time to make money with big opportunities. So, you know, we'll kind of see. And Ricardo Horta has been mentioned with Liverpool, Arsenal, or Napoli. We'll see if that happens. Obviously, you know, I know he signed recently a renewal. He turned down an opportunity last year, a very rich offer to go play in Major League Soccer with Atlanta United. Obviously, the fact that he's being discussed with the Napoli, Arsenal, Liverpool shows that he made the right decision. Question is are these reports true, and will he, in fact, wind up going and being sold? And you know what? If I'm Braga and I get 30, 40 million for him, which for a club like Braga is big, I think it would be their biggest amount of money since, I believe, selling Trincão. I would consider doing it. You're kind of saying that you're not going to compete for the top three in the Liga, but it's hard when you're a club like Braga, which is in good shape financially, decent shape, that is. You know, you make a money like that, that sets you up to buy a bunch of new players. And they've got some good young players coming through Braga that could probably step in, and that's the way it is with Portuguese clubs. Somebody gets sold, someone new has to step in. So we'll see what happens with that. RTP has bought the rights to the Portuguese Cup and the Super Cup for the next 2 years. It had been on TVI these last few years. And as a result, you know, most of us, the immigrants abroad, we have all, a lot of us, especially with the Taça de Portugal on that Sunday in May, you know, we're used to seeing it on RTP International for most of us, maybe not all. I know, you know, most of us. But they have bought the rights for the next 2 years. And I say this because if RTP now has the rights, the chances of some of these matches now being on RTP International are more than likely going to happen. So we've had a few Taça de Portugal finals. We've had a few Super Cups that were not broadcast on RTP International. And you couldn't really find it anyplace. Unless you went to, you know, a bar or a restaurant and watched the game. But really good news for those abroad. I think this is great news for Portugal. RTP already shows one Liga B win match a week. Estoril Porto, by the way, is the match for this weekend on RTP International. But RTP International now, because I remember in the past, they used to show sometimes, like, for instance, I know with the quarterfinals, they used to show like two or three of the quarterfinals. We don't have that privilege this year. I understand the Federation's going to go with the better offer, but you don't get TVI. I think maybe TVI has an international channel. I'm not sure, but I also don't understand why they couldn't cut a deal and put the match on RTP International. Someone was telling me a story that it's because there are some other countries that have the rights already to the Taça de Portugal, but that shouldn't necessarily mean that those rights cover the whole world. I mean, it should go by country. I believe that's how they do it with the Premier League. But so the bottom line is it's going to look good. That's not going to change anything with the Taça de Portugal final in May. But obviously, when we have the Super Cup in early August moving forward, a lot of us immigrants are going to be able to watch those games on RTP International. So that's really very good news. I mentioned before that, by the way, that Sá Pinto is going to be the new manager of Moreirense based on reports. A lot of people don't understand the recycling in Portugal, and sometimes it looks like you can't believe it. But you have to also understand something. You don't make a lot of money managing a club in Portugal unless you're in the top four clubs in Portugal. You're not making millions of dollars, let's put it that way. You're not making a lot of money. Carvalhal's making good money. Probably Pepa's making some decent money. I don't know what they make in the rest of the league, but I've heard, it's not great. I mean, you got players in the first division at smaller clubs that aren't making 100,000 euros. So my point is I'm not surprised to see all this recycling going on in Portugal because there is a limit to what they could pay. And to be fair, you want to hire a Portuguese manager because they know the Liga better than bringing in a foreigner and doesn't know anything. And maybe there's something to be said about that you don't need somebody. It's all about knowing your players and feeling them against your team. But in Portugal, I think you need to know your players. I think you need to know the players in the league. You need to know the cultures. You need to know the stadiums. And I think that's why a lot of times you have, a lot of recycling. Congratulations to Leonardo Jardim for winning the Saudi Super Cup. That is some very big news. And let me end it by saying Atlético dos Arcos, my team from the districts, playing in the promotion division of the districts in Viana do Castelo. Big match this weekend against Valenciano. Let's be honest with you, it's a big match every weekend. But they are in first place in their group with 6 points. Valenciano has only three. This is only the third match day because in the two divisions, the top five teams in each of the two divisions got promoted to this promotional group, and now they're playing for one team to get promoted. So good luck to the boys from Atlético dos Arcos. Let's bring home the 3 points against Valenciano. And obviously, I'm always rooting for them. And I always like it. If I'm not busy, I love to catch the relato, the play-by-play in Radio Valdevez. There are people who probably think, what? Like, but I enjoy listening to that whenever I can. And to me, that's the heart of Portuguese football. Everybody thinks about the youth, yeah. But a lot of the stars usually start at these lower divisions as kids. And I remember Jardim when he was at Chaves playing Atlético dos Arcos, although they were under a name many years ago. There are a lot of people that are playing in the first division that many years ago played against Atlético dos Arcos. So I remember this very well. Folks, I'm going to wrap up episode 100 here, and thank you as always for listening to me. Let me just also correct two things. I think, and I do this a lot because there's just a lot that I want to get off my mind, but last week I think I was talking about the Taça de Portugal final, and I said Chaves beat Porto back when Vilas Boas was manager. Obviously, I meant to say Porto. I got my words mixed up. So, and then I think I also mixed up Paulo Fonseca and Paulo Sousa in one sentence when I was talking about Paulo Sousa going to Flamengo. So apologies for that, and I wouldn't be surprised if I made a mistake in this episode. But listen, thank you for your support. Looking forward to another 2022 this year. this year, hopefully my schedule gets better. Right now, it's just not possible for me to do interviews, but I've already discussed it with three or four people, and I'm looking forward to, in the spring, doing a lot more. But right now, different situation, and just easier for me whenever I have time to drop this. And in this case, I was dropping this now so I could put it out on Friday. Anyway, folks, thank you for listening. Please take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you next time. Ciao, everybody.